Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So lately, you could say it's been a bit of a crisis period in my life. Without wishing to, you know, worry that the many esteemed listeners of the My Weird Prompts podcast will give you the grisly details. I mentioned there was a leak in our apartment, and as we rent, and if it was just a leak, it would have been not much of a crisis, but regrettably, things took a very escalatory turn through water intrusion and a failure to repair that resulted in my wife and I having to sleep on the sofa for a while and then ultimately find temporary refuge in a friend's apartment. It was all a bit harrowing, and we're still very much in the midst of the situation. Relocated. So what I'm clutching in my hand right now is a whiteboard. Why am I clutching a whiteboard? Don't you already have a whiteboard, Daniel? I do. But I figure that our temporary accommodation, it's kind of a crisis response center of sorts for us right now. Like, we're living elsewhere to have a bed to sleep on, and we've got our laptop up and running. Now, what is this connected to the podcast, you might wonder? Am I just venting? No, I'm not. I've always been really inspired and interested. I mentioned this before. As a prepper, and I guess maybe I prep because I've been in these situations many times, and I've seen, well, not many, but several times. And I know, especially when you do things like renting, how quickly basic things like your safe shelter can just be thrown out the window. So I'm also a multi-monitor user, as you guys know. And I also mentioned before that I draw a lot of inspiration from the work of people working in the emergency response field, whether that's ambulance dispatchers or all the people, all the unsung heroes at the various levels who make cities and places safe to live in. And I admire greatly their ergonomics. I once made a photo book where I printed out these photos of command centers, and I got a really nice diversity of examples. I got some kind of, you know, super geeky stuff from Reddit. I got some things from the financial services industry. And then I found some great pics of military command centers, you know, that just happened to be in the news, and they gave a tour to journalists, ambulance dispatch centers. And the ergonomics are phenomenal. It's not quite like depicted in the movies where you have these kind of glass screens and information coming up in the wall, but I can't help but notice a few commonalities. The reason I bought this whiteboard is that when in the situation, you can see that information visibility becomes key, whether that's putting it up on a screen or on a big board and big font that everyone can see. They do that very, very well. They tend to have time displays with the local time and the time in UTC or Zulu, which we've talked about before, banks of monitors everywhere. And my questions for you, Herman and Corn, is I have to, sadly, to the best of my knowledge, I was going to say I've never been in one, but that's maybe not true. I did manage to get a week as an intern at an air traffic control tower once in my life. Yes, it's a true story. How did I do that? I wrote to the aviation authority and I said, we had to do an internship in school. And I said, any chance you guys, I don't imagine you get many requests from people like me, but could I do it in the ATC tower? Like, would you let me in? So I did it, and it was very cool. Cork Airport, true story. So I guess I have been in one semi-environment like that. But otherwise, I think these are spaces that are pretty much off limits to civilians, whether that's a forward response center or a fixed command center or whatever the case may be. So Herman and Corn, I guess what I'm wondering is how many of these are out there? Does every city have this big control suite where all the, you know, CCTV cameras and the electricity is managed? Does every power company have one? What are they called? And who designs these things? Because they're very impressive. And what can we learn, us who are not working, we don't go to a day job where we show up to a dispatch center, in terms of information visibility, in crisis especially, what can we learn from how the pros do it in these very, very specifically designed ergonomically. They're not just designed for ergonomics, but designed for information visibility and sharing. What can we learn from how these guys do it? I want to say one thing I think we can learn, because I also mentioned I'm into voice typing. I think they use voice quite extensively. Headsets, etc. Quickest way to get information into a computer. What kind of gear would I see if I walked into one? Okay, Herman and Corin, enough questions for me. Over to you. Let's talk about professional command centers and how they do what they do.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother. It is a bit of a rainy January afternoon outside, but we are cozy in here with some hot tea and a very strange prompt to dig into.
Herman Poppleberry here, and I am already vibrating with excitement. Corn, I have to say, hearing Daniel's audio prompt about his temporary setup really hit home for me. It is the ultimate DIY engineering challenge.
It really is. For those who missed the intro, our housemate Daniel has been dealing with a major leak in his apartment upstairs. He is currently camping out in a spare room with a whiteboard, a multi-monitor setup, and a very focused look on his face. He called it his own little crisis response center, and it got him thinking about the professional version of that.
Which is a perfect segue into today's topic. Daniel was asking about professional command centers. You know the ones. The big dark rooms with the glowing walls and the rows of screens you see in movies like Apollo 13 or any high-stakes thriller. He wants to know how common they are, who actually builds them, what they are officially called, and most importantly, what the rest of us can learn from how they handle information when things go sideways.
It is a fascinating topic because we often think of them as these rare cinematic spaces, but they are actually all around us, keeping the modern world from falling apart. I mean, Herman, you've been looking into the sheer scale of this, right? As of January 2026, how many of these places actually exist?
Oh, thousands upon thousands. It is not just NASA or the military anymore. Every major airline has a global operations center. Every large utility company, like the ones managing the power grid or the water supply, has a control room that never sleeps. If you look at a city like London or Singapore, they have specialized centers for traffic, for the subway system, and for emergency services. Even large corporations like FedEx or Amazon have what they call global security operations centers to track their assets and people in real time across every time zone. Recent industry estimates suggest there are over 10,000 major data centers globally, many of which have attached network operations centers, while thousands more command centers exist across other sectors.
So it is less of a rare exception and more of a standard requirement for anything that operates at scale. But what do we actually call them? Daniel was asking about the official names, and I know there is a bit of an alphabet soup involved here. I can never keep them straight.
You are not kidding. The names usually depend on the specific mission. If it is for a computer network, it is a NOC or Network Operations Center. If it is focused on cybersecurity, which is huge right now, it is a SOC, a Security Operations Center. For emergency services during a disaster, they call it an EOC, which stands for Emergency Operations Center. Then you have TOCs for traffic, and of course the MCC or Mission Control Center. But lately, we are seeing centers like RTICS or real-time intelligence centers, such as those used by modern police departments to integrate drone feeds and body cams. Collectively, the industry often just refers to them as mission-critical environments.
Mission-critical. I like that. It implies that failure is not an option in these spaces. But let us talk about the design for a second. When you see these on TV, they always look so sleek and futuristic. Who is actually behind the layout? Is it just regular architects, or is there a more specialized field involved?
It is a very specialized niche. You have firms like Constant Technologies, Evans Consoles, and Winsted that do nothing but design and equip these rooms. And it is not just about making it look like a sci-fi movie. It is actually deeply rooted in something called human factors engineering. There is even an international standard for this, ISO 11064, which covers everything from the layout of the room to the height of the desks.
An international standard for room layout. That sounds incredibly detailed. What does it actually cover?
It is broken into seven parts. Corn. Seven.
It covers the principles for the design of the whole center, the arrangement of the workstations, and even the environmental requirements. They have to consider things like sight lines to the big video wall, making sure no one has to crane their neck for 12 hours. They look at acoustics so people can hear each other without shouting, and they even look at thermal comfort so the room does not get too hot from all the electronics.
I imagine the lighting is a big part of that too, right? Daniel mentioned he is getting a bit of eye strain with his current setup.
Absolutely. Lighting is a science in these rooms. If you are a dispatcher or an operator working a 12-hour shift in a windowless room, the lighting has a huge impact on your fatigue levels. Many modern command centers use tunable white lighting that shifts its color temperature throughout the day to match your circadian rhythm. It keeps you alert during the night shift by using cooler, bluer light, and then warms up as you get closer to your shift change. It helps prevent that brain fog that leads to critical mistakes.
That makes a lot of sense. And I imagine the furniture is a bit more robust than what we have in our home offices. Daniel mentioned he is using a whiteboard and his laptop, but these guys have specialized consoles, right?
Exactly. These are not just desks. They are heavy-duty consoles designed for 24/7 use. They often have motorized height adjustments so an operator can switch between sitting and standing, which is crucial for staying focused. They also have specialized cable management because an operator might be looking at 6 or 8 monitors at once. If a cable snags or a monitor fails during a crisis, you need to be able to swap it out in seconds without crawling under a desk. Some of the high-end ones from companies like Evans even have integrated cooling and personal climate control built right into the console.
It sounds like the physical environment is built to remove as much friction as possible. But let us get into the tech, because that is what really defines these spaces. The big video wall is the centerpiece. Is that just a giant television? Or is there something more complex going on behind the scenes?
It is much more complex. Usually, it is a mosaic of high-resolution LED or LCD panels. At the recent Consumer Electronics Show in early January 2026, announcements included incredible new micro-LED walls that have almost zero bezel, so it looks like one continuous sheet of glass. But the real magic is the video wall processor. This is a specialized piece of hardware like those from Barco or DataPath that takes dozens of different data inputs like camera feeds, maps, news broadcasts, and live data dashboards, and allows the manager to arrange them on the wall in real time.
So it is like a giant desktop where you can move windows around.
Sort of, but with much higher reliability. If a computer crashes, the wall needs to keep showing the other feeds. And here is a cool piece of gear Daniel would love, the KVM over IP switch. KVM stands for keyboard, video, and mouse. In a command center, an operator might be responsible for 4 different computer systems, maybe one for the radio, one for the maps, and one for the database. They do not want 4 keyboards on their desk. The KVM allows them to use one set of controls to glide their mouse across all the screens seamlessly, even if those screens are connected to completely different machines in a server room a mile away.
I remember we touched on something similar back in a recent episode when we were talking about the resurgence of the command line. The idea of having all your tools at your fingertips without switching physical devices is a huge productivity booster. But in a crisis, it is more than just productivity. It is about survival.
Precisely. And that brings us to the core of Daniel's question. What can we learn from how they handle information? The most important concept in a command center is something called the Common Operating Picture, or COP.
The Common Operating Picture. Okay, break that down for me. Why is that the gold standard?
It means that everyone in the room, from the technician at the desk to the director standing in the back, is looking at the same set of facts. In a crisis, the biggest danger is fragmented information. If the police think the bridge is open but the fire department knows it is closed, you have a recipe for disaster. The command center's job is to take all those disparate streams of data and synthesize them into one single, authoritative version of the truth that is visible to everyone on that big wall. It eliminates the "I thought you knew" or "I heard something different" conversations.
So it is about breaking down silos. I can see how that applies to almost any project, even if you are just a small team working on a software launch, or in Daniel's case, trying to manage a home renovation while living out of a suitcase. If everyone is not on the same page, you waste time repeating yourself or making contradictory decisions. But how do they keep from getting overwhelmed? If you have all that data on one wall, isn't it just noise?
That is where information hierarchy comes in. Most people, when they are stressed, try to look at everything at once. They get tunnel vision. A professional command center uses a system of alerts and thresholds. If everything is green on the dashboard, the operators just monitor. But the moment a metric hits a certain level, say a water main pressure drops or a server temperature spikes, it turns red, it might trigger an audible alert, and it automatically gets promoted to the center of the big wall. They use a dark cockpit philosophy.
Dark cockpit? Like on a modern airplane.
Exactly. The idea is that if everything is running correctly, the display should be relatively dark and calm. You do not want a bunch of flashing lights and bright colors when things are fine. You save the bright, attention-grabbing colors for the things that actually need a human to intervene. It prevents alarm fatigue, which is a real danger where people start ignoring alerts because there are just too many of them. It is all about protecting the operator's cognitive load.
That is a huge problem in our digital lives. Every app we have wants to send us a red notification dot for things that are definitely not critical. If we managed our phones like a command center, most of those would be silent and invisible until something actually mattered. It reminds me of what we discussed back in a recent episode about the Israeli legal system. How you have these different layers of law, and you have to know which one takes precedence. In a command center, they have a literal visual precedence.
That is a great connection, Korn, and they are using more AI now to help with that filtering. In a modern traffic operations center, they use AI-based video analytics. Instead of a human watching 1,000 cameras, the software watches the cameras and only flags the ones where it detects a car stopped in a live lane or a pedestrian on the highway. It acts as a force multiplier for human attention.
But what happens when the tech fails? I mean, we are talking about mission-critical stuff here. If the AI goes blind or the power goes out, does the whole thing just collapse?
That is where redundancy comes in. And this is a huge lesson for all of us. Professional centers follow the PACE plan. It is an acronym that comes from military communications planning, primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency.
PACE. Okay, I am taking notes. Primary, alternate, contingency, emergency. Give me an example of how that works in a real command center.
Sure. Let us say you are a dispatcher. Your primary communication might be a high-speed digital radio system. If that goes down because of a tower failure, your alternate is a dedicated cellular network. If the cell towers are overloaded during a disaster, your contingency might be a satellite link. And if all else fails, your emergency plan might be a runner with a physical map and a notepad. They never rely on a single point of failure. They architect for failure.
That is a sobering thought. Most of us just have a primary plan and maybe a vague idea of an alternate. If our internet goes out, we are basically paralyzed. But these centers are built on the assumption that things will fail. It is that prepper energy Daniel mentioned in his prompt, but applied at an industrial scale.
It really is. Even their power systems have layers. They have a UPS, an uninterruptible power supply, which is basically a massive bank of batteries that kicks in instantly if the grid fails. That buys them time for the diesel generators to spin up and take over the load. Some of these centers can run for weeks without external power. They even have redundant cooling systems because if the air conditioning fails, the servers will melt down in minutes.
I love that. It is about reducing the number of decisions you have to make in the heat of the moment. You make the decisions when you are calm so you can execute them when you are stressed. I want to go back to the visibility aspect for a second. Is there a psychological benefit to having that information physically present in the room, rather than just tucked away in a browser tab?
Absolutely. There is a concept called ambient awareness. When the information is on the wall, you do not have to go looking for it. You can be having a conversation with a colleague and just glance up to see the status of the situation. It creates a shared mental model. It also reduces the cognitive load of having to remember facts. If the timeline of the crisis is pinned to the wall, you do not have to keep it in your head. You can use that brain power to solve the actual problem. We call this the OODA loop.
The OODA loop? That sounds like something out of a cartoon. What is it?
It stands for Observe, Orient, Decide, and Act. It was developed by a fighter pilot named John Boyd. The idea is that in any conflict or crisis, the person who can go through that loop the fastest wins. You observe the data, orient yourself to what it means, decide on a course of action, and then act. A command center is essentially a giant machine designed to make the OTA loop as fast as possible. The video wall helps you observe and orient, the consoles help you decide, and the communications gear helps you act.
That is such a powerful insight. I think about how often we get stuck in the observe phase just by the act of searching for information we already have. Where was that email? What did that spreadsheet say? In a command center, the answer is always right there.
And they are taking it even further now with something called digital twins. Digital twins continue as a major trend into 2026. A city like Singapore has a complete virtual model of itself that lives in the command center. It is not just a map, it is a living, breathing simulation.
A digital twin. So you can run simulations in real time? Like, what if we close this road?
Exactly. If a water main breaks on a major avenue, the command center can run a simulation to see exactly which buildings will lose pressure, which streets will flood, and how the traffic will divert. Then they can automatically send out the alerts. It moves the center from being reactive to being proactive. They can see the crisis before it even happens.
That is incredible. It is like having a crystal ball, but backed by hard data and engineering. I think Daniel is going to be very happy with this deep dive. It turns out his whiteboard and multi-monitor setup is basically the seed of a multi-million dollar mission control center. He just needs a few more acronyms and a pace plan.
He just needs the tunable lighting and a pace plan for his coffee supply, and he is all set. But we should address the audio side too, because Daniel mentioned voice typing and headsets. How big of a role does audio play in these high-stakes environments? It is huge, and it is getting even more advanced. Many centers are now using spatial audio. If you are an operator and you have three different radio feeds coming in, maybe the police, the fire department, and the hospital, the system will actually place those voices in different spots in your headset. The fire department might sound like it is coming from your left, and the police from your right.
Wait, really? Like three-dimensional audio in a video game?
Exactly. Our brains are much better at separating voices when they come from different directions. It is called binaural intelligibility. If all the voices are coming from the center of your head, they just turn into a muddle. By using spatial audio, the operator can focus on one voice while still being aware of the others. Developments at CES this year include brain-computer interface headsets from companies like Neurable partnering with HyperX that can track an operator's focus and tell them when they are getting too stressed or distracted.
That is fascinating. I had no idea. It really shows how every single sense is being optimized in those rooms. It is not just about what you see. It is about how you hear and even how you feel in the space. It is the ultimate expression of form follows function.
Every pixel on that wall and every decibel in that headset is there for a reason. There is no decoration in a command center. Everything is a tool.
Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today. From the alphabet soup of NOCs and SOCs to the dark cockpit philosophy, the OODA loop, and the power of a common operating picture. It really makes you appreciate the invisible infrastructure that keeps our world from descending into chaos every time there is a storm or a power surge.
It really does. And it gives us some great tools for our own lives. Visibility, hierarchy, and redundancy. If you can get those three things right, you can handle almost any crisis, even a leak in your apartment. Just remember the PACS plan, primary, alternate, contingency, and emergency. If your primary plan is to call a plumber, make sure your alternate isn't just hope it stops leaking.
Spoken like a true Poppleberry. Before we go, I want to say a huge thank you to Daniel for sending in this prompt. It was a blast to dig into, and I think it gave us all a lot to think about regarding how we organize our own missions, whatever they might be.
Absolutely. And hey, if you are listening to this and you have a weird prompt of your own, or if you just want to tell us about your own DIY command center, we would love to hear from you. You can find the contact form and all our past episodes at myweirdprompts.com.
And while you are there, you can check out the RSS feed to make sure you never miss an episode. We are also on Spotify, so you can take us with you wherever you go.
And one more thing. If you have been enjoying the show, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a quick review on your podcast app or rating on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show, and we love reading your feedback.
It really does make a difference. Well, this has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We will see you next time.
Keep those prompts coming.
So, Herman, be honest. If we were going to build a command center for this house, what would be the first thing on the video wall?
Oh, without a doubt, a live map of every open shawarma place within a 5-kilometer radius. That is, mission-critical information, Korn. I would have a red alert trigger the moment the local place starts running low on lamb.
I knew you were going to say that. I think I would add a countdown timer for when the next load of laundry is done, and maybe a moisture sensor for Daniel's ceiling.
See? That is the common operating picture right there. Food, clean socks, and a dry ceiling. We are basically NASA already.
Almost. We just need the headsets. Anyway, thanks again for listening, everyone. Bye for now.
Bye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.